Welcome to the Interesting Football Podcast. My name's Laurie Knox and I'm joined by former four-time Kidderminster District Rounders champion, Simon Day, as we once and for all decide who are the most interesting team in the Premier League. This week, we're focusing on Wolverhampton Wanderers. Simon Day, how are you and what do you think of when you hear the name Wolves?
I'm very good, thank you. Wolves, the last two times I've been there, I've seen Gillingham lose by a combined score of 10-0.
But, brutal.
Yeah, exactly. But I still got quite fond memories of Wolves. I quite like the ground. I've seen plenty of good games there. I've seen Gillingham win there. I've seen Gillingham thrash there, obviously. But yeah, I've got quite fond memories of Wolves. And it is my nearest Premier League club to where I live. So
I don't remember modelling you that well. What is it you like about the ground?
All seems to be a good atmosphere there.
Okay.
Which, to be honest, I can't say that about many football grounds. It's always a good atmosphere. But yeah, whenever I've been to Wolves, there's always been plenty of singing. It's a good away end, good views. Even though I've sat in different places there, it all seems to be a good view there. It's pretty easy to get to. Yeah, one thing it's lacking is there ain't many great pubs about in Wolves.
Okay.
But yeah, it's always a good away trip, Wolves.
My memory, obviously, is with you. And we went to see Sheffield Wednesday's first game out of the Premier League, our instant return to the Premier League. That's what we thought 22 years ago. Wednesday's first game down and then really pumped for the new season starting. And then Kevin Pressman got sent off after 13 seconds.
Wednesday then... don't say too much more about that.
Oh, okay. Right. I will keep my mouth shut. But that's my big memory anyway, which we will probably talk about later. So, Simon Day, why don't you tell us fact number one?
Fact number one, well, I'll change the order now and I'll make that fact number one, as we've already touched upon it. But Kevin Pressman's red card versus Wolves for Sheffield Wednesday in the year 2000 is still the fastest ever red card in Football League history.
Wow.
And we were there.
Yeah.
I feel like this being the last episode of the Premier League series, it feels like something a bit personal there. And remarkably, it was after 13 seconds he got sent off. But Sheffield Wednesday, not only did Sheffield Wednesday kick off, they kicked off and went forwards from the kickoff. They passed the ball forwards a couple of times, gave it away. Then Wolves sort of lumped it forward. Someone, Kit Spire, I think, went through on goal and Pressman came miles out of his area for no apparent reason and handled it and trudged off.
Yeah, and Wednesday then had to put in a 17-year-old who was the reserve keeper, never played before, Chris Stringer, who was absolutely appalling but kind of made some saves. Like, I'm not, you know, almost... What's the name of that internet meme? The guy who saves penalties with his face.
I don't know that one.
But it was, yeah, kind of like comedy save somehow. He actually turned out to be pretty good. In fact, I remember going to watch us play at Gillingham later on that season. He was our best player. He just, to be fair, he was a 17-year-old kid who was just chucked in, as you say, intimidating atmosphere of Wolverhampton Wanderers. It was all probably a bit too much for him. And then he retired before the season ended with an injury. So quite a season for 17-year-old Chris Stringer.
That's terrible. I did discover that whilst Pressman's red card was the fastest from the start of a game, during his time at, I think, Sheffield United, Keith Gillespie picked up a red card after 0 seconds of coming on a substitute.
How did that happen?
He came on a substitute whilst the ball was out for a throw-on and he elbowed someone in the face before the throw-in was taken.
Brilliant.
So, I actually, Gillingham's game on Monday, which I watched, against Fleetwood, was one of the dullest games I've ever watched in my life, despite the fact it was a really important game, actually featured a very rare instance of a double red card for the same tackle.
I saw that on social media.
I can't think of seeing that at all before.
No, that's definitely a 50-pointer in the Football Wide Spy books, isn't it?
Both players, basically, it was literally a 50-50 ball, and both players lunged in. I don't think either of them were with any kind of violent intentions, but they both went in over the top, missed the ball, and essentially took each other out. The Fleetwood player, I don't know if he broke his leg, he was in a pretty bad way and had to be stretchered off. Mm. I feel like the Gillingham player milked it to try and avoid the red card. But they both got a red card. And weirdly, I feel like the referee probably got it right.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but even though I don't think there's any intent, I think they both were a bit reckless. Mm. And it was over the ball and it was lunging, blah, blah, blah. But I can't think of seeing that before. Two players sent off for the same tackle.
Yeah, same instant when there's a bit of handbags at 10 paces and all that. But same tackle. No, I've never heard that before. Yeah, so that goes on to a question of bizarre red cards.
Gillingham's Ifeanora picked up two red cards whilst Gillingham played, and they were both crackers. Once was when he went to take a throw on, and the ref gave it the other way, so he threw the ball at the linesman. And the other was at a game when he tried to appeal for a penalty. It didn't get given. So he ran up to the referee and booted the Wrexham player who was standing next to the referee, right in front of the referee. And he just did it and just walked off.
That reminds me of the classic Joey Barton move. I'm not a big Joey Barton fan, but what he did I thought was hilarious. The final game of the season when Man City won their first Premier League title. The Aguero game when Barton got sent off and on his way out, it's like, oh, fuck it, I'm just going to kick someone really hard. Yeah. Try and injure someone. I'm already off, aren't I?
I'll go off in style. I'm a big fan of the red cards where the player doesn't bother waiting for the red card to be branded. Yeah. I'm done. So I'm off. But you don't seem to get, you talk about comedy red cards. I almost feel like that's a thing of the past now. You don't seem to get... There ain't much handbags in football anymore, is there?
No.
I know sort of the younger generation sort of lose their shit whenever there's any kind of pushing or shoving in a football match. But it's pretty small beer, isn't it, these days? You don't get any punches thrown or anything like that, do you, anymore?
This is true.
And I think that's for the worse.
I swear blind that I am aware of how bad memory is, that I saw 5'6" Danny Wilson deck a Cambridge centre-back in the 1993 FA Cup and actually send him to the floor and get a yellow card for it. Now, again, I'm aware that memories play weird tricks, but this is a memory I've had for for 29 years. It's always been, it's not like I just suddenly, didn't that happen like 20 years ago or something? No, this is a memory. It's always been there. So I'm not, I don't know. I don't know if I've tried looking for it on YouTube, obviously.
I'm sure the famous Graham Souness foul against Aberdeen, I think.
Yes.
I think that was a yellow card offence.
Well, it should have probably been a prison sentence.
Yeah, exactly. He went over the top of the ball doesn't really do it justice, does it?
No.
It was over the top of the knee. Tackle, wasn't it, really? with Souness false as well.
Right.
Yeah. Who'd have thought that man would go on to be Dale Winton's best man? But
is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Him and Dale Winton were like best friends.
Wow.
And Barbara Windsor was part of their social group.
Their clique.
What did they talk about in the pub?
Yeah, that is one of the weirdest celebrity groups I've ever heard of.
Yeah, is it on a par with the Geller Jackson Blaine triumvirate?
See, because they're all just weird, right? So I kind of get that. Okay, it's just a load of weirdos just sitting in the pub talking about weird things. Well, I doubt they sat in the Nag's Head, to be fair. So, but yeah,
get
like I say,
Souness,
Winton. Right. Is Dale Winton dead?
Yeah, he died a couple of years ago.
Okay, all right, okay.
Yeah,
not sorry as Graham Souness, I'm sure, but there we go.
Or Dale Winton. Yeah.
Yes, that's a fairly good point. Right. Okay. Yes. Yeah, so there we go. We both witnessed a piece of history. I'm glad it's still got the record. I wasn't sure about that. So yeah, happy days.
And who knew you could get from Kevin Pressman to Dale Winton in just 5 minutes?
Who knew? Indeed. Right. Okay. Fantastic fact number one. Quiz time for you. Obviously, you think of Wolves legends. You think of Steve Ball, who in the 80s and 90s, prolific scorer. But Wolves never made it to the Premier League or the top division when he was there. So he's kind of a bit of a throwback, a one club player, pretty much. I mean, he did play for Hereford for a couple of games after he retired. He came back And before that, he played for a couple of teams, but no, he's pretty much Wolves through and through, there for almost 15 years. And yeah, he played for England 13 times, twice when Wolves were in the third division, 11 times in the second division. So yeah, Simon Day, you've got a potential 60 answers here.
60?
Yep, 60 answers. I want, apart from Steve Ball, players who have represented England in the lower echelons of English football, i.e. outside the top division.
Oh, dear God. Right, okay.
It's a tough one. And I'm going to set six as par, one every 10 seconds. If you're struggling, I'm going to help you out with some, because there are quite a few big names here.
Are there?
There are indeed, yes. Okay. Well, Mr. Day, your time starts as soon as I type in 60 second timer to Google. Now.
David Nugent.
Yes.
Peter Taylor.
Oh, yes.
Now we're struggling. I feel like there might be a couple of goalkeepers from recent years.
Three regular goalkeepers in our lifetime have played outside the top division.
Fraser Forster.
No.
I feel like there might be a couple of one-hit wonders, like John Ruddy or David Stockdale, someone like that.
No.
Or who's one? Lewis? Lewis who played when he was at Peterborough? Or did
he did. Think of regular England keepers. We've got between 43 and 125 caps.
Oh, gee. Chris Wood, David Seaman.
Woods, yes.
Woods, really? Yes. Who was he playing Norwich. For? Oh, was he? Oh, okay.
15 seconds to go.
What, Rob Green?
Or no,
the one who was at Jack Butland.
No,
Aaron Ramsdale when he was he at Bournemouth? No, he wasn't at Bournemouth. Sheffield United was he when he got a cap? No. Oh, this is a tough quiz. This is.
It was a tough one, and time is up now. Time is up. Three we got there. I thought I gave you a pretty big clue then. Goalkeepers between 43 caps, Chris Woods, and 125. I said.
Oh. Peter Shilton, obviously.
Peter Shilton, yeah, Peter Shilton. And the other England regular who played for West Ham in the what was then the First Division, David James.
I remember him playing at Gillingham, actually, when he was England goalkeeper.
Really? Sam Johnson from last year.
I knew there was West Brom keeper, West Brom keeper.
Others, Sunderland had a couple of players at the same time, Kevin Phillips and Michael Gray.
Oh, that was, that's probably the Ericsson era, wasn't it?
Yes. In the 2010s, two players, Jay Bothroyd, Wilf Zahar.
How was Zahar when they were in the Championship? I didn't realise that.
Other notable names were in the 90s, early 90s, there was Earl Barrett of Oldham, Stuart Pearce of Forest. Some other random names I'll go through. West Ham had three players when in the late 70s, early 80s in their second division. Trevor Booking, Alan Devonshire, Alwyn Martin. Some other random ones. We've got Peter Taylor, as you said, former Gillingham manager. He was in the third division with Palace. We've also got Rodney Marsh, Mark Hatley, Alf Ramsey, Brian Clough. But there we go. Anyway.
That was tough.
It was a tough one.
It threw me a bit, to be honest. Yeah, my brain wasn't right on that one. But,
okay.
Good question.
Let's hear fact number two, Mr. Day.
Fact number two is that Wolves were awarded and converted the first ever penalty in Football League history.
Oh, that's a cool one. You do like your penalty facts, don't you?
I love a bit of penalty action. Care to have a guess at what year the first penalty was?
Oh, my word. What happened before? Did they just have free kicks in the area?
Well, yes. They had indirect free kicks in the penalty area, and briefly, shortly before the penalty introduction, they brought in the concept of penalty goals, because before penalties were on the scene, regular sort of outfield players making handballs on the line was quite a common occurrence, because they were just giving away a free kick, weren't they?
Right.
And probably there weren't red cards back then. So you could just like save the ball with your hands, and all you're doing is giving away a free kick. So
yeah.
Why not?
Okay. When were penalties introduced? Wow. I'm probably going to be out by decades. I'm going to go with 1953.
1891.
Oh my word, yeah.
You weren't wrong, you're out by half a century at least. Yeah, there used to just be indirect free kicks in the penalty area, which to this day, I enjoy an indirect free kick in the penalty area.
Mm, yes.
I think they're a lot of fun, indirect free kicks in the penalty area. Usually nothing happens, but it's just a great spectacle, isn't it?
You see, right.
The ball on the edge of the six-yard box, and every single opposition player standing on the goal line, and then it just being blasted usually straight at them. It just makes for a great spectacle that you don't see often enough.
It does, it does. Yeah, it's always a dilemma, isn't it? Do you tap it to your mate or do you blast it? What I'd love to see is somebody go for a blast and make it obvious and all the defending team just take a step back off the pitch, basically. That would be a good move, but I've yet to see
play
that.
Offside? I don't think that counts.
Offside
ball's a bit weird, so yeah, I don't think that'd work.
No, not offside, because sometimes you just blast it hoping it takes a deflection and goes in, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got you. Yeah, that's true. If there's no one's on the pitch, then yeah. Okay. Interesting tactic. I can't remember the last time I saw one. It used to be a reasonably common occurrence, didn't it?
Mm.
I can't remember the last time I saw one.
So why was it? Obviously, back past the keeper, I suppose keepers are just becoming more comfortable in the ball, apart from Manchester City's keeper. What else was it for?
Sorry, what else?
I suppose, did you get indirect free kicks in the area? I suppose there was that short-lived keepers can hold the ball for 6 seconds rule that just kind of died, didn't it?
Well, also, they used to only be allowed to have 4 steps, didn't they?
which was
utter nonsense, wasn't it?
Yes.
But I'd noticed they could only have 4 steps and they'd sometimes deliberately do the steps, wouldn't they?
Right.
They'd do them slowly and long to show that they're doing 4 steps. And then do a really big wind-up to boot the ball downfield.
So right.
It was a complete farce, wasn't it, of a role?
Yes.
But yeah, obviously goalkeepers are pretty good at football now, which never used to be the case. But you don't seem to get the goal line handball clearances anymore, do you? They're quite good fun. I mean, obviously, the Suarez one in the World Cup was probably
right.
the best of recent years. But you don't seem to get this sort of a player tipping the ball over anymore, do you?
I suppose it's
good fun.
It's too, because I remember St Mirren against Rangers back in the 80s. I remember listening to this on the radio at my grandparents' flat, and but this was before the professional foul rule, and you know this is kind of why, not because of Rangers St Mirren, but this is why it was clearly brought in, because it was one of those that Ali McCoist had a shot and the St Mirren defender just like tipped it over the bar. Got a yellow card for his troubles. McCoy's missed the penalties. And it's just like, well, St Mirren just cheated and basically have had no punishment for it. I get why, you know, the professional foul rule came in. Well, even if the other team don't score, you're getting punished for what you just did.
And then you take that back a step further. Imagine, like, before 1891, you weren't even conceding a penalty. You were just giving away a free kick for that, which presumably the free kick took place on the goal line, virtually. Yeah.
Indirect as well, which is great,
indirect. Right? Yeah, you had to lay it off. Yeah, so we've talked before about how the back pass rule improved football, but back then football must have been rubbish, mustn't it?
It must have been, yes,
absolute nonsense to watch. So it was actually Wolves took the first one in the Football League in 1891, but it was actually invented by a Scotsman who. His name escapes me, but according to Wikipedia, he was a goalkeeper and businessman. Which is a brilliant combo, isn't it?
Yeah, I love that.
He wasn't just a footballer and a businessman. He was a goalkeeper and a businessman. it's a very different thing, isn't it? He invented it due to injustices in the game. So actually, Scotland came up with penalties before England, but Wolves got the first one in the Football League.
Ah, damn. Okay, yeah. You know what? I should have guessed old, because Wolves are obviously they've got a lot of history, haven't they? They've been around forever.
Well, little bonus fact that really surprised me. Well, sort of kind of two facts. First, Wolves were the first club to reach 7,000 Football League goals.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, it was only about 10 years ago. But also, in an all-time Football League table of like points scored, blah, 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 Wolves would be fourth.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I like. I probably would have put them top 20, but yeah, I didn't realise they've sort of accumulated that many points.
Yeah, I suppose they were, because what they found, yeah, they were found, remember, I've just looked up now, they were third in the first ever Football League, Preston obviously winning, Villa second, Wolves were third. And yeah, they've always, you know, not quite dominated, but for the first 50 years of organised football, they were, I don't know, probably like your Arsenal, Man U, Liverpool of the time, weren't they? They were up there, they were always up there. So, nice. Okay, right. A couple of absolute cracking facts. And I'm now going to move us on to what I think is the most bizarre of bizarre fans. Pretty big claim, considering we've had Mia Khalifa, Kim Jong-un, and Osama bin Laden. But for me, you know what? Osama bin Laden and Mia Khalifa are modern celebrities. So I feel like, you know, Osama bin Laden studied in London. Is it that weird that somebody living in London in the 90s? You know, Kim Jong-un is just a fat dictator who sits there eating food and watching sports in his den, right? So, I mean, again, it's not that beyond the realms of possibility that he'll like football. Anyway, but this is I've never heard before of a 19th century football fan. I can't think of any 19th century figures who were into football.
Charles Dickens, not a big.
Was he?
I don't know. I just made that up. I'm just fucking a random 19th century name out, but go for it.
Born in 1857, the composer of Land of Hope and Glory, Sir Edward Elgar, was a big Wolves fan. He lived 48 miles away in Malvern. He used to cycle into Wolverhampton to watch them play. So a 96-mile round trip.
Fair play, Edward.
And as well as obviously Land of Hope and Glory, in the 1890s, he composed a piece. Is that what I should be saying? Is this the correct lingo?
Yeah, I think so.
Called He Banged the Leather for Goal, which is believed to be the first ever football-related song for Wolves striker Billy Malpass.
Did he? he bangs the leather for goal.
He banged the leather for goal is the name of the song, yes. I don't know if it got to number one of the classical music charts or how...
It was a classical piece. That sounds like some kind of like pub sing-along number, doesn't it?
I'll be honest. You know, is it a classical piece? That's a good question. I don't know. I just know the name. So I never considered the genre of it. Well, I just assumed it was Land of Hope and Glory-esque.
What genres were around in the century? It wasn't like EDM, was it? Or it wasn't grunge. I think there was like sea shanties, maybe.
Mm. So, I mean, Elgar, I've never heard of. He's the only 19th century fan I now know of. I can't think of anyone. I always remember Gary Megson, Sheffield Wednesday's former captain. Gary Megson's dad played for Wednesday in the 60s, and then the thing was like his granddad, Gary Megson's granddad, was a season ticket holder. And I always remember thinking, oh, that's pretty cool. Three generations, you know, must be going back to the 1930s. But yeah, here we go. Like, we've got somebody born in 1857 who was a big Wolves fan, you know. Used to write songs about them.
you talking about that has reminded me of a piece of information that's going to be really poor broadcasting, but I think it's really interesting. But it's going to be really poor to say because I need to work it out. But basically, say there's someone alive today who's 100, yeah? Which is, there are, aren't there? Yeah. Uh-huh. So they were born in 1922, yeah?
Yep.
Let's say in their early years, so late 1920s, they knew somebody who was 90, say, yeah?
Okay.
So that person was born in 1832, yep?
Yep.
That person who was born in 1832 was... When they were like, I don't know, six or seven, they knew somebody over the age of 40.
Mm-hmm.
That means there are people alive today who knew somebody who was alive in the 1700s.
Yeah, that's pretty epic.
Yeah.
Mm.
There are people alive today who knew somebody who was alive in the 1700s.
I was trying to think. So, like, my granddad was born in, when would he be born? 1920, I think it was. And I think he was Glasgow, so everybody he knew probably died at the age of 37.
If like the age of at 10, he knew somebody who was like 80 or whatever.
Yeah.
That person at the age of 80 would have known people from the 1700s.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Only two steps away.
Yeah, so that was
really, probably a really boring thing to say. But I find that a bit mad.
I liked it. I liked it. But yeah, can you think of any Simon Day? Who, I mean, who's the oldest known football, the first known football fan to you? I'm guessing you're not going to be Edward Elgar, born in 1857. But even anyone from the 1920s, 1930s, apart from Gary Megson's granddad?
No, not really. Not really, because, I mean, but yeah, obviously part of the issue is there was nowhere near as many famous people, were there, back then?
No.
There was less media. There was no TikTok stars of the 1920s, was there?
No.
But it was a lot harder to achieve fame, wasn't it? So
yes. There
was less people to pick from. But equally, yeah, I've never heard of, like, Winston Churchill going to watch the football, or going back further, people like Arthur Conan Doyle or Jane Austen, regulars down at Hampden or whatever.
Mm.
So, no, I can't beat Edward Elgar. It's like the oldest fan. So, fair play to him.
Like I say, you can see now, I say, in a way, that's probably the most bizarre fans we've had.
Yeah, I mean, Land of Hope and Glory, obviously, I know. I don't think I could name another Elgar. Well, I'll be honest, classical music's not really my bag.
Well, there's always he banged the leather for gold.
That's probably my second favourite Elgar track, I'd imagine. And I will be after this trying to seek it out and hopefully make it the theme music for the next series.
I've just got his Wikipedia out and I was trying to look for the section called discography, but I think it was maybe called something different then.
Are there separate pages for singles and albums?
You've probably heard of one of his ones, which was at First Symphony and Second Symphony.
His early work, wasn't it?
Well, in 1902, there was Dream Children. Jesus, Elgar. He worked for the BBC. I don't know.
Wow.
And also, a couple of years before that, Cocaine.
Cocaine?
Yeah, maybe. Yes.
Okay. Well done, Edward.
There we go. Right, okay. There's our bizarre fan. Let's have our final fact, Mr. Day. Final fact of the series.
Final fact of the Premier League is... It's quite a good one. It's football related, in keeping with the unusual theme of this evening. Wolves are the only club to have won all four divisions and all three domestic cups.
All four divisions and all three domestic cups. Damn.
As in the FA Cup, the League Cup and the Football League Trophy.
Has any other club won all four divisions? I feel like there must.
There's four others.
Leicester?
No.
Ooh. Damn. Who else would have been won all four divisions? I can't think of any. Preston, I suppose.
Preston, Sheffield United.
Sheffield United? Did they win the... Okay, okay.
Burnley.
Mm-hmm.
And Portsmouth.
Okay.
Portsmouth have won two of the cups as well, but they haven't won the League Cup.
Right.
The Football League Trophy and the FA Cup. Both in recent years, but they've never won the League Cup. So yeah, Preston are the only club to have achieved the Big Seven, should we call it?
Even though okay.
So does that make them the most interesting club? Just purely the fact they've won the most? They've won the most variety of trophies in English football.
Yeah, and have they won... I'm trying to think, have Wolves won a European trophy as well?
No, they've got to the latter stages, but I don't think they've won a European trophy.
Okay. Because Wolves were synonymous, weren't they, with big European nights. In fact, Dennis Irwin, when I was looking for bizarre fans, he was a Wolves fan. You know, he said he grew up watching Wolves games in Europe. I think Wolves used to be synonymous with like those big European nights.
They played. I can remember Dennis Irwin playing for Wolves at the back end of his career in the one of the aforementioned Gillingham thrashings. He played with Kitsneal.
Along with all Ince.
When I think they even had Glenn Hoddle as manager around then. They had a proper sort of galaxy of stars for the championship.
Mm.
But yeah, they've won all seven trophies, which I kind of think, I've only ever seen, ignoring playoff finals, which I kind of feel they are trophies, but it's not quite the same, is it? Mm-hmm. I've seen Gillingham won one league title, and that is by far and away, it's not my favourite game watching Gillingham, but it's by far and away the biggest achievement I've seen Gillingham muster.
Right.
It'll be a fond memory. So to me, seeing your team pick up a trophy is as good as it gets as a fan, isn't it?
Yes.
Have you? I mean, you've seen Wednesday win the League Cup, haven't you?
League Cup, back when it meant something. Yeah, yeah. So haven't won any leagues actually.
They've gone up, obviously, haven't they?
Won playoffs or finished second, but I hope I've not just made a massive faux pas. We went up from the third tier. Yeah, once by the playoffs, once we finished second, pipped Sheffield United's second spot, which is fun. But there we go. Just the one trophy.
I've only seen the one trophy. I feel like winning the playoffs is better than finishing second.
Yeah, definitely. Because you know what? Wednesday, late charge right now, thinking, okay, I've got the playoff final date set in my phone. And actually, you know what? Quite a decent chance of sneaking into second place. The two other teams who've got a chance, MK Dons and Rotherham, are just throwing points away right now.
That's some bad news on that front. Rotherham have got Gillingham last day of the season. Gillingham haven't won a home game on a Saturday since August.
but we're
terrible as well, so I wouldn't hold out much hope on that front.
Well, I was gonna say mixed emotions because obviously, you know, I'd rather Wednesday went up, but you know, yeah, if you've got a choice, you want your day out, don't you? You want your day out,
undoubtedly, because all right, you do pick up a trophy for winning the playoffs, but who cares, really? It's as close as I'd get as a Gillingham fan to seeing my team in a final. Everything on the line game, because I suppose we've never really made a serious attempt to win the Football League trophy, and we're certainly not going to win either of the other two. So it's the only chance you get to see your team in a winner-takes-all match. And obviously, with it being at Wembley as well, it is a better way of going up than just being runners-up. But ultimately, seeing your team win the league, as Wolves have done with all of them, is like the best, because it is like the culminate. Your team is the best in the division over the course of 46 games.
Right.
That's as good as it gets, I think. And Wolves,
God, you make me feel bad now.
Yeah.
In 42 years of life, I've never, ever seen been able to say my team was the best in the division. Damn.
Yeah, you could probably discount the first few years.
Yes.
They've even won Wolves. Back when it was regionalised, they even won the regional bottom division.
Oh, right. Oh, damn. That's showboating, that is.
Division 3 South or whatever. They even managed to win that.
They probably could have won both, couldn't they? They could have been in South or North.
Well, I've wondered this. Really something that, if I could be bothered, I could find out. See, the little conference is the Conference North and Conference South, isn't there, below the conference? Mm-hmm. The teams that are in the Midlands, like in the North. But if a load of like Northern teams, more northerly than Kidderminster, got relegated from the conference, presumably there's been occasions where teams have had to shift divisions.
Quite possibly. Anyway. Yeah, not sure. Going back to Wolves very quickly in their European, they did reach the 71-72 UEFA Cup final. And after travelling to Portugal, Netherlands, East Germany, Italy and Hungary, not quite as exotic for the final, they lost over two legs to Tottenham.
Tottenham was a European final.
Tottenham was a 71-72 European final. And also randomly, looking through there, Tottenham in two rounds in a row beat Romanian opposition, Rapid Bucharest and UTA Arad. Apologies to Addy if he's listening for my pronunciation.
I do find it weird back in the sort of, I mean, obviously the Champions League is a bit silly in the sense that you don't have to be champions to get in it. But it is funny looking back at sort of how teams used to be able to get to European finals just by beating two Romanian sides and like the Norwegian champions or something. There's times when like Liverpool have got to the European Cup final in the 70s and 80s and they've just had like, they've had to beat like Barry Town in the quarterfinals or something. Do you know what I mean?
It's yeah,
probably not literally that, but just had virtual buys in the early rounds.
I think when Man U got to the 91 Cup Winners' Cup final, they, well, I remember they beat Wrexham to get into the quarterfinals. And I think the hardest
Welsh
team.
Cup champion.
I think the hardest team they beat was Bordeaux. Yeah, because I remember Ron Atkinson being interviewed before the aforementioned League Cup final. And they're saying, oh, you're not scared about Manchester United. They just reached the Cup Winners' Cup final. And he just started laughing like, against Legia Warsaw. Like, so our reserves could have beaten Legia Warsaw.
It was a funny thing, the Cup Winners' Cup, wasn't it? Because if you think, if it was brought back now, it'd be a bit of a farce, wouldn't it? Because in the vast majority of cases, Leicester last season being an exception, the cup is won by a team in the top four. So presumably would the entry to the Cup Winners' Cup go to, I don't know, this season, Crystal Palace, because they got to the semi-finals?
Yeah, I think that's how it worked, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, so you get into Europe just for getting to the semi-finals of the cup. In other words, winning four games.
Right.
Which just
And also, just one thing, that 1972 UEFA Cup final was also the first ever UEFA Cup final. It was the Intercity Fairs Cup before that.
The Fairs Cup, yeah. And that's a great name for a cup competition. I think when Wolves won the Football League trophy, I think it was in the days of either Sherpa Vans or Freight Rover.
It
certainly
classics.
Predates Papa John's and Checker Trade.
The Papa John's, it's just pitiful, isn't it?
Video, didn't I, last week of I always get Paul
the alive Chuckle Brother.
Yeah, I always get Paul and Barry mixed up.
I think it's Paul who's alive, right?
A friend of mine was getting off a train a couple of years ago, and the alive one was getting on the train at the time. And he was going to say all right and hello to him, then he couldn't remember which one it was that was alive.
Oh, what, Fancy?
I'm like, don't know. Yeah. he's put right anyway. But yeah, he, if anyone doesn't know, he did. So before the Papa John's Trophy final a couple of weeks ago, the Alive Chuckle Brothers, a big Rotherham board, he delivered the trophy for the Papa John's final to the pitch side whilst on the back of a Papa John's delivery moped. That's how classy the Papa John's trophy is.
And also for our Icelandic viewers, listeners rather, the Chuckle Brothers were basically some really bad comedy duo that had a children's programme in the 1980s. Whenever I hear of the Chuckle Brothers, I think the one time I ever bought one of those like women's own style magazines, I remember I was staying with my brother when he was in Ealing Broadway. I was on the tube on the way to his place and I overlooked this woman's shoulder and she had this newspaper headline. She had this woman's own magazine, sorry. And it had a picture of like, you know, the man and the married couple standing there holding hands, staring at the camera, looking sad. A picture of Barry Chuckle inside a circle. And the headline was, "My affair with Barry Chuckle almost cost me my marriage." And you can't not buy the magazine after reading that, can you? Ran straight to the shop. I've got to buy it. And I'm gutted. I've not kept it. And that it's not online because the whole thing was just absolute gold. The way Barry Chuckle took advantage of me. Like, you know, he knew that I was feeling down. You know, she really made herself into the victim of it all when clearly she just got starstruck by Barry Chuckle.
You've got to think as well, from the man's point of view, nothing can get you down more than your wife leaving you for a Chuckle Brother, can it?
No, I mean,
you've got to feel pretty low about yourself there, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, I know. No, I'm not going to say. I'm not going to say that. I was going to say, yeah, it's probably best just to end things there, shall we?
This story, I feel like this has been brought up in a previous episode, but I don't know whether it was an episode we've done of this or just some other online nonsense we were chatting about once.
Right.
I do recall from that story that a part of the article was the bloke saying that he won't, because he's so upset about this, he won't let his children watch Chuckle Vision anymore. And they're upset and confused by the situation.
Oh, jeez. I mean, wow.
I just imagine he's like, when it comes up now, oh, get that off. Get that off the TV. We're not having that on it. Why, Dad? Not telling you. Just get it off. Put CITV on. Far hell.
Wow. Could you imagine what those kids were like? Felt like at school later when that obviously that article did the rounds. I mean,
oh man,
their secondary school life must have just been hell.
Yeah.
To me, to you.
Just singing the Chuckle Vision theme tune at them all day.
Chuckle Vision.
Yeah, exactly.
Chuckle Vision.
Repeat. Yeah, did you know there was a third Chuckle Brother?
I did not. I see like the Oasis, the third Gallagher brother, the unsuccessful one.
The fourth BG, Andy. No, there's a third Chuckle Brother, and he was the straight man in Chuckle Brothers episodes. So you know quite often they'd like go to a hotel or something, and there'd be like a receptionist. Who was basically the stooge, wasn't he?
Right.
He'd be like playing it straight, and every time something went wrong, he'd be the victim of it as the Chuckle Brothers try and carry a pane of glass across the street or something.
Mm.
Yeah, that was the third Chuckle Brother. Sure, there's something in the news a couple of years ago that he was basically married to a woman who was like 60 years younger than him or something ludicrous.
Yeah, Hugh Hefner of Rotherham.
Blatantly living off the fact he's the third Chuckle Brother. And
so,
who can blame him?
Mr. Day, what do we think about Wolverhampton Wanderers? Are they the most...
They're not, because... I'll tell you why they're not. Because there hasn't been... I feel like the beauty of Manchester United was there was a bit of... There was some football content. Like, it was about Best taking the first penalty shootout or whatever. But primarily, it was Eric Cantona being in a soft porn movie. And I feel like Wolves didn't have any soft porn in their content.
This is true. If we're just looking at football facts, I think, you know, we've had fastest sending off. We've had the first penalty. Yeah. We've had, you know, a club with great history. We've had some UEFA Cup facts in there. Edward Elgar. I mean, that's an absolute beauty, in my opinion. But
but
it's been too football heavy.
And one thing we've established over this series is that football isn't the most interesting thing about football clubs.
Soft porn is,
if any Premier League clubs have got like an ex-French striker, like Thierry Henry, then make yourself more interesting by getting to do some soft porn.
Yes.
That's one thing we've learned here. So, yeah, unfortunately, I feel like Manchester United have scooped the lineal title as the most interesting club in the Premier League.
Yeah, that's disappointing. Okay,
disappointing. And it shows this is completely fair because I wouldn't have wanted Manchester United to win.
No, me neither. It just seems too obvious and they've won enough over their lifetime. I kind of wanted a plucky upstart like Norwich or Southampton, but no, it's Manchester United. Devastating. Well, devastating.
I mean, we didn't find Myling Klaas as bizarre a fan as Kim Jong-un.
No, fair enough.
Well, maybe a bit controversial, but there you go.
Well, everyone who's stuck with us, thank you very much. I hope you've enjoyed these 20 episodes. We are going to be doing another one in the future. We originally said about the Championship, we might go on to the World Cup. We're not sure yet, but we are going to have another season of something. So, stay tuned. But, yeah, thank you very much, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this episode and the other 19. And that's goodbye from me.